Some of them on my list is Q and Casey Gondon. Okay, good afternoon and welcome. Please remind from your original submission, which we already read, and I see you've tabled some extra information for us today. So we're happy for you just to lead us through that, if you'd like.
Thank you. Yes, I'm Hugh Yard, I own a farm at Waitaka, which is also north of Gore. Just to get started, it was a surprise recently that I learnt that communities of Scottish settlers in northern Georgia seceded from the then Confederate States in the USA in the 1850s and supported the abolition of slavery. They were despised by the Southerners as disloyal and for not contributing to the Civil War, and not trusted by the North for being from the South, yet they stood by their convictions, as we do here today. It shouldn't be any surprise then that this land and water plan submission process has mobilised hundreds of Scottish settlers' descendants to express themselves, point out that which is neither right or fair, and state how they want this plan to represent their aspirations too in a workable form. I'm commenting today on four parts of the submissions on the water and land plan. Firstly, the working draft of the plan allows for a half page of Ngāi Tahu values, but the revised proposed land and water plan, this 42A report that I received 6th of June, devotes 6 to 7 pages or part pages in the preamble and introduces us to the partnership with Ngāi Tahu, including the revelation of a charter of understanding with agreed common goals and confirming the spiritual qualities, the essential life forces of resources, and elevating or recognising Ngāi Tahu to guardian status in partnership with Environment Southland. The drivers of the plan are in fact the RMA and the National Policy Statement for Fresh Water Management. The Treaty of Waitangi never mentions the word partnership, yet we will be encumbered with its inappropriate use if the plan is adopted as it is currently written. The treaty uses the word seed, you see, which is where I started from, the Latin sedere, meaning retreat. And it says Maori were to cede the sovereignty of New Zealand and to cede to the Crown the exclusive rights and right to buy and sell land. And in return, they were given rights and privileges of British subjects and full rights of ownership of lands, forests and fisheries. This is no criticism of Maori values, as they are aligned to our own concerning natural resources. It is a criticism of the plan that gives disproportionate prominence to Maori compared to other affected groups. Here is my point. Where in this plan does it acknowledge us? The sons and daughters of Scottish settlers, including the Irish, English and Dutch and others, of course, these third, fourth and fifth generation Southlanders that came when the surveys were complete, they settled, subdivided and developed the land, they built schools and churches and communities. Each generation toiling alongside their elders, learning, adapting, improving and contributing to the wealth and good of the province. Southland is rated as one of the greatest agricultural provinces in New Zealand. It is great due to the enterprise and the resource management of all of us. Until, of course, the black and white invasion over the last 20 years, these people did an excellent job. So my point is, where is it mentioned in the plan that we are equally the partners of Environment Southland? We are the guardians of natural resources and custodians of the land, and some acknowledgement is necessary of the dedication of family farms, of farming families, who strive and still strive to pass their land on to their families in a better state than when they took ownership. The story of Southland is a tribute to these people, and in some respect to them is due. They are here today in all the hearings because we have been ignored in the plan. Secondly, the plan, if adopted without the water quality requirements and nutrient-setting targets within the physiographic zones, is like passing an Act of Parliament without the appendices, the schedules, the raft of rules and regulations are attached to it. Why should landowners develop stock policies, farm management plans and nutrient plans now if they require amendment or revision once the water quality targets and nutrient limits are derived for each zone later? Some apparently not until 2025. We have maps of our property that are inaccurate because the topographic climate surveys were inaccurate, I suspect. The overlay of the geology maps of the soil map leaves me wondering if Picasso was employed to complete them. When we trawl the maps in detail, the topographic detail, like roads, disappear, rendering me unsure where exactly we are. There is no direction what will happen where various percentages of different physiographic zones are present on the same property. My conclusion, it is absolutely imperative that the water quality expectations and the nutrient targets or limits within each zone are appended to this plan before it is adopted. Is there any reason why Environment Southland cannot continue operating under the interim policies currently controlling the intensive farming and intensive wintering practices? That would be prudent in our opinion. Parts of the plan leave practical farmers bewildered, but that's not surprising when Southland Federated Farmers chose to not engage and be part of the dialogue as the plan developed and rural input came from other sources. When I was involved with Feds in Southland, I advocated that all associated with the farming sector change their practices, whether farmers, those in real estate, advisory, consultancy, or rules and regulations would be imposed on them. I've been proved correct and got censored for my stance, so I resigned. Recently, one of those opposing my position received a life membership for disservice to the industry, I suppose. But for example, out-of-season applications of nitrogenous fertiliser is just a no-brainer, or late-season applications of annual fertiliser dressings, when it is beneficial and preferable to apply the same at the height of the growing season, like November through to February. Yet the planned and silent and fertiliser discharges are a permitted activity. Cultivation is in one area is stipulated once in 5 years, when cultivation is often a three-year program and maybe a 20 or a 30-year cycle. If the causes of nutrient losses and compromised water quality are identified, then why is the plan written to capture everyone into the net, to prepare and annually review management plans? And as an example, if farmers, for example, are non-dairy, not intensively grazing, have no additional stock wintered, do not purchase winter feed, their nitrogen fertiliser requirements are less than 10% of all their fertiliser purchases, they have nutrient losses less than the zone limit set, where can they go and tick a box and be excused of the demands of the plan since they operate proven good management practices already? In summary, we object to the Environment Southland plan imposing rules on landowners identified as not contributing to adverse water quality or having nutrient applications that are clearly within the physiographic zone limits. Freehold title gives us rights to use and enjoy our properties within the law and within this proposed plan. Those who do so should have those rights respected. Finally, I wish to clarify what it is that you will do as a hearing panel. Are you there to recommend phrase changes, paragraphs maybe, or identify sections that need revised? You see, Chief Executive Rob Phillips has reported recently saying the plan will be implemented following public submissions in May. No mention there of considering submissions or changing the plan on the advice of the hearing commissioners, is there? Are we wasting our time being here? I was alerted to the existence of the plan changes, the Section 42A report, by email on the 1st of June. I needed a jackhammer to get those changes from staff, which I did on the 6th of June. After three attempts to receive it, or to request it, having been told they were on the website when they were not, and under the hearing information heading, which I couldn't find, my guess is many submitters are unaware of the Section 42A report. But pertinent in the email sent to us was a statement that the hearing panel has decided all submitters should have an opportunity to respond to the answers provided by the authors of the 42A report. And submitters have no less than 10 working days before you come and present. That was your decision, yet nothing was done to ensure what you decided was action. I've had 4 working days to prepare. Others don't even know this 42A report exists. The links could have been attached to the initial email on 1 June to all submitters. Isn't this an administrative error of sufficient importance to suspend these hearings while the amended proposed water and land plan is properly circulated, especially to all submitters? Thank you, that completes my submission.
All right, thank you for the opening. I address one of those issues before we turn to questions from the rest of the panel. In terms of our role and jurisdiction, it's our job to consider the submissions lodged, to evaluate the points that they raise, and to consider how or if the plan should be amended in response to those submissions. So that's our job. We then make a recommendation to the full council, and we don't have a delegated authority to make a final decision ourselves. We recommend to the full council. But if the council doesn't accept our recommendations, then they can't impose their own decision in lieu of that. They need to refer it back to another hearing. That's the process that we follow. I would see now if the panel has any questions of you. Mike?
Oh, thank you, Hugh. Are you suggesting there should be some limit, input limits on fertiliser use?
Not at all, but from a practical farmer's point of view, I've highlighted the fact that the timing of applications is extremely important. And it was raised one time, I was talking to a chap on the phone who was looking out his window on a property at Waituna. And he said, I'm watching the neighbour going round his farm with a truck, and it was the 6th of June. So what was the purpose of applying a nitrogenous fertiliser in June on Waituna? And did the farmer have no idea of the ongoing problems he was causing in his catchment? So it's not a question of quantities at all. It's a question of understanding good plant and soil, or plant husbandries and soil science, and understanding when it's appropriate to be applying fertilizer.
So what I'm trying to find out is whether you think there should be a rule which says you're not allowed to do that, or that should be perhaps managed by the environment plan. How would that best be managed, that kind of thing?
Look, I think there's huge scope for Environment South and to have an education unit which would be available to farmers there, and it could be a pay-as-you-go sort of a setup. But currently I hear for those people that are going for consents, they're referred to find that information themselves, and some in the staff of Environment South, and this is hearsay, are unhelpful in the detail. But if Environment South had an education unit whereby you could approach them, as I said, pay for their services, Environment South would run charge for it. It could be self-fulfilling, but the opportunity is there for Environment South to assist farmers in complying with the proposed plan.
Okay, thanks.
That's good.
Any questions?
Not a question as such, Mr. Garline. Good afternoon. Your venture into the treaty, though, has presented me with an opportunity probably to help you understand it better. My great-great-grandfather was a signatory to the Treaty of Waitangi with the Queen Victoria's representatives. And he signed the Maori version, and under international law, that has preeminence over English. And there was no such word as seed used in the Maori version. So I just thought I'd give you a wee bit of illumination on that point there.
Thank you for that. Could I perhaps respond and ask, is the term partnership used?
No, it's in Maori. It talks about rangatiratanga, which is chieftainship.
So the point I was making was that the term partnership has entered into the dialogue or into the script at Environment South, and that was what is inappropriate.
Yeah, well, I think that's what the Queen Victoria and the Maori people were entering, a partnership. Well, that's how it's interpreted.
Thanks,
Eric.
Thanks.
Lloyd?
Thank you, Chair. No, I think Maurice has raised a point I was going to raise about fertilisers, so I'll be with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Skyline, for coming in and making this point very clearly known to us.